Hi everybody. I'm gonna go ahead and take over as presenter. I do have a few slides to show you guys. Okay. Well, I'll just go through the slides here right quick. Since we're recording, we'll post this up on someplace, YouTube or Channel 9 or someplace. So talk is all about lighting up your applications with sights and sounds. So a lot of people don't really pay that much attention to how they can enhance their applications using the Microsoft Media technologies. And this isn't just with video, but this is also with audio. A good game requires good audio to really make it come alive. And I use a quote from George Lucas a lot when I'm talking to people about, really lighting up their apps with sights and sounds. And he said that 50% of the film is sound, both music and sound effects. So that kind of thing can really help to enhance your user's experience. And there we have a number of different great technologies that allow you to do that. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So just a quick agenda, introductions, we'll go through the prerequisites, what I kind of expect you to know. Really wanted this to be more interactive with people asking a whole bunch of questions, and maybe later on we can get into a discussion amongst some of the experts here, and kind of get some opinions and thoughts about the current technologies and the future directions. Go over some of my favorite media topics, and then we'll also talk about we'll go through all of the Microsoft Media technologies that are currently available and when they should be used in various scenarios. And then I've got a couple slides on Media Foundation, kind of visualizing the way the Media Foundation stack goes together, both on from Windows Store apps as well as on the desktops, because it's a little bit different. And rather than just throwing buzzwords at you, a picture's worth a thousand words. And so I've got a couple slides that kind of give you an overall feel for how everything is connected and related to each other. Just a little bit about me. I'm a senior escalation engineer in developer services. I am currently on the Windows Store App Developer Services team. I've been at Microsoft about 7 years and I've about 17 years of industry experience. I've worked on content delivery systems. The reason that I got my job at Microsoft is because I could actually spell DRM. In a previous job before coming to Microsoft, I was in a very exciting startup that was doing DRM content delivery over the network. This was just when Napster was kind of getting into trouble, and the company I was working for at the time was the first company to actually legally license content from a record company, and they licensed the entire catalog from EMI. The company still holds a bunch of patents and licenses those patents to this day. So my expertise is in C++ and COM, kind of low-level stuff. I've spent a lot of time with DirectShow, Media Foundation, Wasapi, and Direct3D. I also know quite a bit about the XAML environment, and particularly the way that you can interact between C++, CX, and C Sharp. So I'm an avid filmmaker. I've just started doing some really interesting animation stuff, computer-generated animation, and I've been making music since I was like 8 years old. If you're interested in more, you can go to my blog, blogs.msdn.com, media SDK stuff. I try to update that with the latest interesting Microsoft media-related things, tips, tricks, gotchas, things like that. All right, so I'm just going to expect that you've got some C++ or C Sharp familiarity, COM, you know what classes are, interfaces, etc. Just kind of the basic stuff. The other thing that I'm going to assume is that you know some of the basic media stuff, like codecs, what a source transform and sync are, what color spaces are, etc. If you don't know this stuff, it's not that big of a deal, but it really will help you to get more out of this talk. So things that that you can ask about, I specialize in Windows Store applications at this point, but previous to joining the Windows Store app team, I did a lot of the desktop stuff. And so you can ask me about desktop applications, Windows Store applications. I know an awful lot about digital rights management. And if you have some questions about cloud services, we've got some great guys on the phone that can answer those questions. So here's some of my favorite media topics to kind of conversation later on. Hopefully you can start thinking about these. I love talking about disparate clock synchronization. I loved the discussions about non-deterministic finalization and its effect on audio and video playback. That's probably my favorite subject. I've got some really interesting opinions about content delivery and syndication. You might want to ask me about that. Media platforms and standards, DSP-based pipelines. We've got a few that we use here at Microsoft. If you've got questions about why we've chosen what we've chosen and gone the directions that we have, certainly can answer any of those questions. Also, last but certainly not least, I love getting into heated discussions about latency versus glitch-free audio and video playback, and if it's possible to have both at the same time. So these are the media technologies that we're going to talk about today. So I should say these are basically all of the Microsoft media technologies that we have around today. There are a few that have kind of left out for brevity, but the two that we are not going to talk about today have the stars. Those are considered deprecated technologies, and so we're really not going to touch on those very deeply. But all of the rest of them, feel free to ask questions. We've got some great, exciting new stuff in 8.1 around HTML5 and the video tag. We've also got some exciting new additions to Media Engine, and the Media Element, and we'll talk about that here in just a few. Okay, so let's dive into the various technologies, what they are, and what their recommended use is. So, Media Foundation, what is it? So, Media Foundation is really a family of media technologies. When you hear somebody talk about Media Foundation, you really have to ask them, what specific Media Foundation technology are you talking about? It's not a specific thing. It's an entire family of different media technologies. And the thing that really makes the Media Foundation have a really solid foundation is that they're all based on the same pluggable architecture. And I'll show you that once we get to the visualization slides. But it's really not a single technology. It's a huge family of technologies. So when should I use Media Foundation specific technologies? So if you're writing a desktop application and you need relatively low level control over your media pipeline, use Media Foundation. And what is the killer feature of Media Foundation? The killer feature of Media Foundation are these two lesser known family members, the Source Reader and Sync Writer. Most people, when they think about Media Foundation, they think about the session manager. But the Source Reader and Sync Writer are really these kind of powerful stepchildren of these powerful stepchildren that can come in and do some amazing things for you at very low level, and take a lot of the work out of your media pipeline. So the Source Reader does exactly like it sounds. It will read data out of a file for you. It will either hand you the decoded frames, or it will hand you the encoded frames, and you can do whatever you want with them. It's very lightweight. It doesn't use any infrastructure, and it allows you to provide your own infrastructure. This is great for companies like Adobe, and who are writing tools like Adobe Premiere, where they have their own pipeline and media pipeline infrastructure, but still need access to the bits from Windows. And so the Source Reader will hand you those bits, and you can do what you want with them in your application. There we go. Can everybody see Microsoft Media Technologies Media Foundation?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Great. Source Reader, great technology, hands you the bits. Sync Writer is just the opposite. You can take raw frames and hand them off to the Sync Writer, and it will write it out in the file format that that you choose. There are some limited file formats and codecs that you can use with the Sync Writer. But again, if you want to do your own manipulation of bitmaps in memory and then write them out to a media file, the Sync Writer is absolutely the way to go. It's very lightweight. It doesn't require you to integrate this huge infrastructure of the session manager into your application, and just allows you to just shoot it out to a file pretty quickly and easily. The thing to keep in mind about Media Foundation family of technologies, these are specifically for desktop applications, and it gets a little bit more complicated than that. We'll talk about that in a few minutes here. But the other thing that you need to keep in mind is that all of the Media Foundation technologies require that you code them in C++, unmanaged C++. Non-deterministic finalization is a really big problem with the media pipeline in managed languages, from C Sharp to JavaScript to Oracle's Java, or any managed language that uses a garbage collector is going to have some problems with non-deterministic finalization, and that's going to cause the media pipeline to glitch. And because of that, we want our Microsoft developers to have the and our users to have the best experience with your app. And so that's one of the main reasons why we ask that you don't use managed languages and you just go directly to C++, get the power of C++, get the speed, and create a media app that's really glitch free. All right. If there's any questions at any time, just stop me and let me know. Okay, I said we weren't going to talk about Direct Show, but I just wanted to add it in here just right quickly. Direct Show is a deprecated technology for the desktop. We don't recommend it for use at this point in time. We're really trying to move everybody over to Media Foundation. But there may be some times that you want to use Direct Show. And the big reason that you might want to use Direct Show is that it's got 20 years of well understood and proven stability. There's a lot of different codecs and plugins and things that have been written for Direct Show that you can just grab and plug into your Direct Show media pipeline and just kind of go. There are some known issues with Direct Show, particularly around deadlocks. With custom codecs and custom plugins, and we've solved a lot of those problems in Media Foundation, and so we're really trying to encourage people to move from Direct Show to Media Foundation. And if you're in that situation, feel free to reach out to us here at Microsoft. Feel free to reach out to me on my blog, and we'll see if we can get you some help to migrate all of your legacy Direct Show stuff over to Media Foundation, because it's really not that hard, and I guarantee you that you're going to have a much better experience, both from a developer standpoint as well as a delivering the media technologies to your customers if you migrate from Direct Show over to Media Foundation. Okay, so the media engine. What is the media engine? So the media engine is a lot like the session manager from Media Foundation, but it's a lot less complicated. It's a lot easier to interact with the media engine because media engine takes care of a lot of the underlying moving parts for you that that the Media Foundation session manager doesn't just give you out of the box. And so the media engine was specifically designed to support Windows Store apps, and more importantly, it was specifically designed to support rich compositing scenarios. So everybody knows about XAML. XAML is a really amazing rich compositing environment. And one of the things that we were missing with WPF is that we didn't have an underlying media technology that would really allow us to integrate easily with these with the XAML rich compositor infrastructure. And so out of this kind of imbalance between what XAML was doing and what the media team was doing, the Media Engine was born. And the Media Engine has the killer feature of the Media Engine is the capability of taking in compressed frames from the disk, processing them, and then handing the bits back to you on your own Direct3D service. And if you guys know anything about Direct3D, once you have the bits on a Direct3D surface, you know, the sky's the limit. You can use shaders to do color correction on the video. You can use all of the great tools that are available for Direct3D on the video on the video card, you know, without even stressing the CPU in the slightest. So that's really where the media engine shines, is the fact that you can interact with it directly with Direct3D. So the other thing that I'll just mention briefly about the media engine, although it's really specifically designed for use within the context of a Windows Store app, it is possible to get it to work from a desktop app. It's not necessarily all that easy to do. It's not something that we necessarily recommend, but if you look at the capabilities of the Media Engine and you really feel that it's going to work well for your particular solution on the desktop, it is actually possible to use the Media Engine on the desktop. Okay, again, Media Engine, it requires you to code directly against it in C++ COM on the desktop or C++ CX in Windows Store apps. All right. So we've kind of been talking about low-level stuff. Let's kind of go up a level and talk about the media element. Media element is a high-level technology for media playback. It's really simple. You set the source URL. You drag the control onto your XAML, you set the source URL, and you say play, and the media element just starts playing back the video. It knows about codecs and knows about how to integrate with the XAML's rich media compositor for best performance, and it just plays back your video. So when do you need to use the media element? Anytime you just need simple playback of audio or video. And the thing that's great about the media element is that it's not specific to video. You can use it simply as an audio player to add background music or even in some cases sound effects to your Windows Store app or your XAML app. And the killer feature, you can get audio and video playback going with almost no code required. I say almost. You can set the source property, so theoretically, and the audio autoplay, so theoretically you can get things just kind of playback automatically without actually having to add any code. But when you start writing a little bit additional code for the media element, things really kind of start coming alive for you. So we did add a, so let me take a step back. So the media element also is part of this Media Foundation pluggable architecture. So you can write components and plug them into the media element to extend the media element. And like we've been discussing, you know, in order for you to do this, you really have to write these components in C++ COM or C++ CX in order for them to not get bothered by the managed infrastructure, the GC and the managed stack. But there are some scenarios where, you know, it just really doesn't make sense for you to have to write this, you know, really low level component to do something as simple as just reading bits over a network from a security camera and then having them decoded by the media pipeline. And so that's where the media stream source comes in. And this is a feature that we had in Silverlight that made connecting to various online media sources extremely easy. You can write your media stream source in C Sharp, we can write it in C++, you can write it in VB and VB.net, and connect to that network camera, connect to that YouTube stream, connect, to whatever streaming media source that you want. As long as you understand what the protocol is and you can hand the pipeline the raw the encoded frames, the H.264 frames, we can take that and then, put it onto the screen. So if you're looking to connect to that network stream, the media stream source, new feature, a great feature, and something you should absolutely look into. If you need more power than just the media stream source, you can also drop down and write some low-level plugins for the media element and plug those in as well. Okay, any questions? So something special, specific to the media element is it's only callable from the context of a XAML application. This is a really common problem that we see with people trying to use the media elements, particularly for audio playback scenarios, where they don't have a visual component. There's no video that they're playing back. They just want to make some noise. They just want, sound effects or something like that. The media element, since it's a XAML component, it has to be part of the visual tree. You can't just instantiate a media element and set the source and expect it to make noise. That's not going to work. You'll get an error and you'll be scratching your head for days trying to figure out exactly why it's not working for you. It's because the media element has to be in the XAML visual tree, so you have to add it as a child. So UI element dot child dot add dot children dot add will add your media element component to the XAML visual tree and then give you the functionality that you're expecting. All right, any questions about that? Here we go. Microsoft has embraced this whole HTML5 JavaScript thing, and so we tried to innovate on that front as well in the media space. And we have the HTML5 video tag. So, like the media element, the HTML5 video tag kind of fits that high-level playback scenario where you really don't need access to any of the guts. You don't want to do anything fancy. You just want, audio or video playback. You can just grab the HTML5 tags, throw it in your HTML and run with it. So the killer feature is that you can, unlike the media element, you can truly do code-free audio and video playback with the HTML5 video tag. And got a really neat new feature in 8.1 that's kind of similar to the new feature that we added to the media element in 8.1. HTML5 video tag now allows for media source extensions. Media source extensions allow you to connect to various media sources over the internet. And specifically, what HTML5 media source extensions are designed for is to allow developers to easily integrate adaptive streaming technologies into their applications. We have Microsoft has a great adaptive streaming technology called Smooth Streaming. There are other adaptive streaming technologies out there. Apple's got one, and there's some emerging adaptive streaming technologies. But they're all kind of disparate. There isn't like a single, well, we haven't quite gotten to the point where we have a single adaptive streaming technology as as ubiquitous as some of the other technologies. And so the media source extensions allows you to write extensions that plugs in JavaScript that allows you to plug into the HTML5 video tag and leverage the new adaptive streaming technologies. Pretty cool stuff there. So we've been talking about the media pipeline, so audio and video, but we also have some very audio-specific technologies that are available to developers. So If you need really low level access to the audio subsystem, we do give you that. So we talked about the fact that with the media element, you can do audio only playback, and in some cases, it can be used for sound effects. One of the problems with the media element is that it really isn't optimized for really short file lengths. It's really more optimized for files of at least 2 to 3, maybe 4 seconds kind of time. And so when you're talking about sound effects, the sound effects tend to be, really short, a laser blast or an explosion or something like that. And the media element really isn't optimized for that. And so we've seen some kind of interesting artifacts around trying to playback really short sounds in the media element. There are some things you can do to get around it, and if you do run into that problem, let me know. But we do have a great solution for it. We have this technology called X-Audio 2. X-Audio 2 is born out of Xbox and Xbox 360. It's literally, code just ported over from the Xbox 360 onto the desktop. It gives a really rich environment for game developers to create these just really complex sonic soundscapes. We support 3D audio, we support surround sound, we support both really long clips as well as really short clips, and it takes care of all of that for you seamlessly. So if you're developing a game and you want to add audio to your game, X-Audio 2 is really the only technology that you need to look no further if that's what you're trying to do, because X-Audio 2 is exactly the technology that you want. X-Audio 2 allows you to sequence, allows you to create environments and playlists. One of the really cool features of it is it allows you to create transitional scenarios. So in a game, when you walk from one room into another, the music changes in the new room that you're in. Well, X-Audio 2 allows you to seamlessly bridge the sounds, the background music from room one to room two. Without skipping a beat. I really like X-Audio 2. It's really cool. So X-Audio 2 still is a little high level for some developers. So particularly if you have like a voice over IP application, you're going to want something that's a lot lower level and a guaranteed low latency, and that's where WASAPI comes in. WASAPI. Around here, it's pronounced WASAPI. So WASAPI will get you as close to the audio hardware as possible. There's two different modes for WASAPI. There is shared and direct mode. In shared mode, you are sharing a common buffer with all of the other applications on the system. Whenever another application makes a sound, it goes into this common buffer along with the sound from your app, and it goes into the common buffer and then gets played out. That's because it has a shared buffer, a common buffer, it can create a little bit higher latency. So if you're looking for super, super low latency, and we're talking the time that you send the audio sample down to the Microsoft API, to the time it actually comes out of the speaker, you're going to want to use exclusive mode, and that gives your app exclusive control over the audio playback. We kind of recommend that people don't do that unless they have a really compelling reason to do it. It does give you a lower latency than using the shared playback, but we've worked really, really hard in Windows 8 to reduce the latency of the shared buffer down as far as possible. And the reason that we've tried to do that is that we've been working with our Skype team, we've been working with our Link team, we've been working with a voice over IP solution providers around the world, and that was one of the things that they really were all asking for, was lower latency in the audio stack from Windows 7. And so with Windows 8.1, we've done additional work here. We've tried to reduce the audio latency down absolutely as far as possible. So for majority of our voice over IP solutions, the latency is going to be good enough. It's around 50 to 60 milliseconds or so. But if you're creating a professional audio application, such as Roland's Cakewalk, or let's see, there's some other ones on the market. For some reason, they're eluding me. But if you need that, literally 2 milliseconds round trip latency, you're just not gonna get it out of Wasapi, especially in shared mode, and even in direct exclusive mode, you're still not going to get, 1, 2, 4, 6 to 8 milliseconds of latency. The lowest you're probably going to get out of Wasapi is, maybe if you really tune everything just perfect, you might get, 20 milliseconds of latency, but probably closer to, 30 to 40 milliseconds of latency out of Wasapi. So, what we recommend for professional audio scenarios like Roland's Cakewalk is that you go ahead and use a third-party driver infrastructure that's really designed for super low latency interactions with the audio device, because we kind of had to strike a balance. We wanted low latency with the audio stack, to support voice over IP solutions, but at the same time, we wanted to make sure that the audio stack was relatively glitch-free. In other words, we wanted to make sure that there were no clicks and pops. And this is like, one of my favorite subjects is, trying to find that balance between, glitch-free audio playback, no clicks and pops, and low latency. It's really difficult to get that balance, and we think we found it for the most part with Windows 8 and additionally in Windows 8.1, but it's still not going to really be low enough latency for some of the professional audio scenarios out there. Particularly like studio audio scenarios, but there are third-party options out there that we encourage people to use. Okay, any questions about that? All right, so let's visualize Media Foundation. So this is kind of a hierarchy of the Media Foundation. I like to kind of think of it as a layer cake in Windows Store apps. So it's a little bit different for Windows Store apps and desktop, and so we'll start by talking about Windows Store apps. So as we said, the basis of all of the Media Foundation technologies is this pluggable architecture, and we have standardized the way that these plugins are written, so that they can plug into various stages in the media pipeline within Media Foundation. And we typically call this the MFT architecture, or Media Foundation Transform architecture, although it's kind of a misnomer because Transform typically takes an input and has an output. But you can also create, use the same MFT architecture to create components that is more like a source, where it has a network or a file input and a single output or multiple outputs to the media pipeline, or a renderer where it has, a single or multiple inputs and then outputs to the network or to the screen or something like that. But really, the foundation of Media Foundation is this pluggable architecture, a pluggable MFT architecture. So in Windows Store apps, on top of that, we have the Media Foundation Session Manager. And this is the same Media Foundation Session Manager that you find on the desktop. And we've ported that over to work within the context of the media engine for Windows Store apps. So the thing you need to keep in mind here is that you really don't have any access to Media Foundation Session Manager from the context of a Windows Store app. Media Foundation Session Manager is completely encapsulated and wrapped by the next level up, which is the media engine. And the media engine is the Windows Store app component that your app is going to interact with. And like we said before, you can interact directly with the media engine and use it to grab the DX surface with the Video Blitz, rendered directly onto it. The media engine is also the basis of our HTML5 video tag, as well as the XAML media element. So So again, keep in mind that even though Media Engine is built on the Media Foundation Session Manager, you don't have any direct control over the Session Manager, but you can create your own plugins and plug those into the Media Engine, which will then share them with the Session Manager and integrate your custom plugins into the Media Foundation Session Manager. Via the Media Engine. So the other thing to keep in mind here is that in order to interact with the Media Engine, you have to do it in C++. We don't have any managed technology or managed wrappers around the Media Engine, but Media Element can be accessed from managed languages, and of course HTML5 video component can be accessed from HTML5 and JavaScript. All right, any questions there? Pretty cool little layer cake. All right, so let's talk about desktop apps. Desktop apps are a little bit different. For desktop apps, we have the same MFT architecture. So this is, again, really the base of our layer cake is this MFT architecture that we've created. And on top of that MFT architecture, for the desktop apps, we have the session manager, which we've talked about. We have the sync writer and the source reader, of course, which we've talked about in the past as well. So it's a little bit different than what we have for Windows Store apps. Windows Store apps, we have some slightly higher level technologies for you to interact with desktop apps. If you want to use Media Foundation, it's a little bit more low level interaction with the components. Cool. Any questions, comments, thoughts, disagreements? Love to hear it. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit. We've talked about all of the components that run on our devices. So now let's talk about how we get these devices connected to stuff in the cloud. So we have a number of different offerings. We have Windows Media Services, we have IIS Media Services, and we have a new offering, a relatively new offering, called Windows Azure Media Services. So Windows Media Services is now deprecated. Is that right, Dave?
Not quite.
Not
It will
quite.
be. I mean, it's deprecated, as in we're not replacing the. We're not updating the technology. That is replaced by IIS Media Services, but it is still supported.
Okay, so are we currently recommending people to move from Windows Media Services to IIS Media Services? Is there a parity of features there yet?
Not 100%. The main difference is multicast. That's the one thing that Windows Media Services can do that the lower two services cannot. So if you need to do multicast, then use WMS. For all other scenarios, you can use IIS Media Services or Windows Azure Media Services.
And the Windows Media Services, is that supported on 2012?
Negative. So the last version of Windows that it is supported on is 2008 R2.
Okay, and do you know when end of life of 2008 R2 is?
That's I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it is in about 2 years, and that's basically when the end of life for Windows Media Services follows that of 2008 R2.
Okay, so now I'm going to ask the tough question. Will we see IIS Media Services get the brain just left my head? Get that functionality of Windows Media Services?
Multicast.
Multicast. Thank you. Wow.
I'm not sure. Well, that is yet to be determined.
Okay, I knew it was going to be a hard question. All right, great. So IIS Media Services is really a great technology. One of the things that it does extremely well is it supports smooth streaming, and smooth streaming is Microsoft's adaptive streaming technology. And if you're not familiar with adaptive streaming, if you watched any of the Olympic streaming online a few years ago, that was all powered by Microsoft's smooth streaming technology, where where it would start out, with a low bit rate, and as it figured out, what your network situation was, it would, increase the quality of what you were seeing. And then if something happened to the network, it would decrease the quality of what you were seeing. So adaptive streaming is really kind of what we hope is going to continue to be the future for media streaming, and Microsoft's Smooth Streaming is certainly one option there. The other thing that's kind of cool about IIS Media Services is that it allows us to do transmuxing to HLS. And HLS is a competing media streaming service. I believe it's also an adaptive streaming service. A lot of the industry has kind of started to try to move toward and now away from HLS as a standard. If you need that capability, IIS Media Services certainly allows for that capability. Is there anything else you'd like to add about IIS Media Services, Dave, that you can think of, maybe the killer feature?
There's a number of things, but this is kind of a high-level view, so you probably won't get to go into them too much. The one thing I will say is that it's all HTTP-based, whereas with Windows Media Services, you had to use somewhat more obscure protocols like MMS or RTSP. With IIS Media Services and Windows Azure Media Services, everything is 100% HTTP TCP based. So that makes streaming through firewalls and caching devices extremely easy.
Cool. Great. Anything else? Nope. Okay, great. So let's talk about Windows Azure Media Services. And so this is really the reason that I asked Mr. David Bristol to join us today. David is our resident Windows Azure Media Services expert. He's worked with a number of different individuals and deployments in the field, including some really massive deployments of IIS Media Services and some of the massive Windows Azure Media Services deployments that we've got coming that we've got going on. So Windows Azure Media Services, it's a cloud-based offering, and the thing that's really kind of cool about it is that it offers both streaming as well as transcoding. So you can use it to stream content to the entire world, and you can also use it to transcode your content from whatever format that you have on premise to a format that's more appropriate for the web, like HLS or Smooth Streaming. And it does all of that stuff for you in the cloud in a very auto magic way and hands off. You don't have to worry about maintaining any hardware or any of the software, kind of the cloud promise brought to media. What else can you tell us about Windows Azure Media Services, Dave?
A couple of things. So primarily right now, it's geared towards on-demand content. We don't have live just yet. That will be something. That's something that we're working on, and it's a coming soon feature. It's also going to be the platform that is going to power the Sochi Olympics, at least for NBC. So we're going to do a significant portion of the content delivery off of Windows Azure Media Services. let's see, what else is there? It's like James said, an integrated cloud offering. It does encoding in the cloud, serving both HLS and Smooth Streaming content, as well as MP4, and we are actually very, very recently are able to do MPEG Dash streaming. So MPEG Dash is another adaptive streaming standard, and it's really more of the agreed upon standard that's more cross-platform friendly because it is in fact a standard that a number of companies have worked towards. So,
That's on the next slide. So, yeah.
okay. You can go ahead if you want.
Okay. So since Dave is talking about MPEG Dash, let's go ahead and let's go to the next slide and let him talk about MPEG Dash. Go for it.
So it is an open standard. It is based on an ISO MP4 container. Typically, you're going to use H.264 video and AAC audio, although that's not specifically required. There's some, I guess, disagreements about the exact video and audio codecs that are going to be used. We do fully support it in Windows Azure Media Services. It is not something, I just want to point this out, it's not something that is supported in IIS Media Services. That's even though the manifest that is created for Smooth Streaming is very, very similar to that of MPEG Dash, there are some differences. But the Windows Azure Media Services is actually very, very easy for us to add support for MPEG Dash because of its extreme similarity to Smooth Streaming. But the hope here is that MPEG Dash will become the HTML5 standard, or the adaptive streaming standard for HTML5, so that you will no longer have to use any sort of browser plugin for various browsers like Firefox and Internet Explorer and whatever other third parties are out there. So one of the items here is it supports content protection, and I forget all of the different mechanisms for this, but I think it's both it supports PlayReady to a certain extent. Oh, I'm sorry, it supports Common Encryption, which is something that PlayReady can support, if I remember correctly. A little sketchy on the details for that, but we do fully support MPEG Dash in Windows Azure Media Services.
And that's, I just want to chime in on that. That's, I mean, MPEG Dash is something that Microsoft is behind 110%. I got an opportunity to talk to one of the gentlemen from Microsoft that was on the international panel that put together the standard and got it ratified as an ISO standard. And he was just, he really, before we even started, we really wanted to make sure that Microsoft was 100% on board with the standards process. And he said affirmatively, yes, Microsoft is on board with MPEG Dash. We're behind it. We're not abandoning Smooth Streaming, but we want to, extend and embrace MPEG Dash because we really see it as a mechanism to unify not just the browsers, but unify the platforms into one media delivery system. So one of the things that you can kind of think of about MPEG Dash is that it's flexible. It's not just a singular technology that's being dictated by a large multinational corporation. It's an open standard that allows different content types to be plugged in, different streaming standards to be plugged in, different adaptive techniques to be used within the same framework. It also allows for different content protection mechanisms to be plugged in, which is extremely powerful because now you're not just locked into whatever content protection mechanism happens to be on platform A, B, or C. You can use the content, basically whatever content protection mechanism works best for your business needs. Of course, Microsoft will be, like Dave says, Microsoft will be supporting content protection in MPEG Dash through our PlayReady technologies. Again, standards compliant, but it doesn't necessarily. But you don't necessarily have to use ours. Cool. So I am a huge fan of MPEG Dash. I think that MPEG Dash is something that we've really been waiting for a very long time. We've had really great media standards in the past. We've had NTSC, ATSC, DBB, etc. That kind of really helped us to unify the media landscape. And once we kind of get into the digital realm, things start to get a little bit more murky. People were, various formats were fighting for supremacy, and everything moves at internet speed. And it's taken us quite a while to get to the point where, we kind of understand the network environment. We kind of understand what some of the best ways are to really deliver content to customers. And that's really where MPEG dash comes in. It's kind of one ring to rule them all. It's one streaming protocol umbrella to allow for compatibility with devices and browsers across the internet. And so if you haven't investigated MPEG Dash and the use of MPEG Dash inside of your organization, I would highly recommend that you take a look at it, because I really do think that it's going to be the future of media streaming on the internet. Maybe not, today, maybe not tomorrow, but I really do feel that they've done such a great job with it that eventually most major streaming organizations like Microsoft will reach out and embrace MPEG Dash in a big way. Okay, can you tell I'm an MPEG Dash fanboy? All right, here we go. So I guess that's pretty much all I have from my side. If there's anybody on the phone that has any specific problems that they would like to ask about, if you have any technical questions that you'd like to ask, if you want to have an opinion, like I have opinions about just about everything from MPEG Dash to Facebook. Do you need some architectural guidance? We're here. We can offer architectural guidance. Also, if you have opinions about the current Microsoft Media Stack, is it too difficult to use? Is it too easy to use? What if you have some suggestions on how we could make the Media Stack better? We'd love to hear them. So I guess I just have to open it up to you guys for questions, comments, thoughts.
This is Brian. I don't have any specific questions, but this has been a great overview of all the media technologies. So I really appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate
Yeah.
that.
I have one then. I have created an application. It's called Web Radio, and I already asked a lot about it on the MSDN forum because I'm using the media element at this moment. How hard would it be to use Media Foundation for it instead of the media element? I have the idea Media Foundation would give me more options and more possibilities for new features like recording the radio streams.
Sure. So what platform are you targeting? Are you targeting desktop application, or are you
No.
targeting Windows Store?
It is targeting Windows Store applications.
Okay, great. So Windows Store applications, we're a little bit more limited in what we offer. So currently you're using the media element, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Okay. And what is it you're trying to really accomplish in your app?
Well, I have a lot of negative reviews about the bug that's in Windows 8.0 about the caching. And I think I'm struggling with new features like to record the radio stream to a file so you can listen it later.
Okay, so do you want to listen and record at the same time?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, there unfortunately, off the top of my head, I can't think of any really simple solution for that. I can think of a couple different possible solutions. So one solution is to continue down the route of using the media element, and then use Wasapi, which is our
Yeah.
low-level audio technology. And you can set Wasapi up in what we call a loopback mode. And so you can record and you can play what's being you can record what's being played from the internal source. Does that make sense? So whatever is being played out through the sound card, you can set Wasapi up in loopback mode to record that to disk.
Okay, and the application won't go get suspended if it moves to the background.
Okay, so background audio is definitely something different. So you can specify to use background audio for the media element as long as you implement the media controls correctly. If you want to record background audio at the same time as play, So I think that should be possible, but I think it's a lot more complex than I could explain.
Can you say what the challenges are?
So Wasapi allows you to control the session. So you can specify different session types for the media element. You can specify or for the audio subsystem. You can specify like communication session. You can specify background audio session. You can specify foreground session, etc. And so, using Wasapi, you can specify that you want to lock your portion of code that's doing the playback into like background audio session or communication session. And by doing that, that portion of your code continues to execute even though the rest of your app has gone to sleep. And we do that specifically to enable the voice over IP scenario where you might navigate away from your Skype app. But you want to continue to have that conversation in the background. And so Wasapi gives you relatively fine-grained control over that. And we do have extremely complex but comprehensive sample that kind of demonstrates how to do that with Wasapi. I can certainly make that available to you.
Okay, that would be great. And if I understand right, I start still with media element. I'm not going to any DirectX classes or Media Foundation classes to start the audio stream.
So I really think that your best bet is to. So what's your source? Let me start there.
My source is just an URL and a live stream.
Okay, live stream from what is it? Something standard that we're able to connect to directly from the media element.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't have a custom stream that you need
No,
to
no,
work
no,
with.
no.
Okay. So I think your best bet is probably to continue to use the media element, and then just kind of shim the recording in underneath using Wasapi. That's certainly one option. Another option for you that you can think about is writing a plugin for the media element to do the recording. So you can tap directly into the audio stream that's coming through the media element, and you can siphon off that audio stream and dump it into a file, and then send that those bits back downstream to the SAR, the audio renderer. So basically, you're just kind of sitting in the middle, siphoning off the uncompressed audio bits. If you want to recompress them inside of your plugin, you can do that, or you can just send them directly to disk. So that's another option that you
With
might
the
want to
media,
think
with the
about.
plugin, you mean the media stream source
No,
things?
I'm talking about an MFT, a Media Foundation
Ah, okay,
Transform.
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's another option for you. So I think those are probably going to be your best options. I don't think since you're not doing video, I don't think that the media engine or anything on that ultra low level is going to do you any good because that's more video focused and not necessarily as audio focused. So I think the two technologies that, or the one technology that you should really take a look at is Wasapi, and then the other one is take a look at writing a custom MFT.
Okay, thanks. I will definitely look into that.
My blog is bugs.msdn.com/media
I saw
SDK
them. I
stuff.
have them in my reader, that one.
Yes. Great. So feel free to reach out to me through the blogs. I will get back to you, within 24 to 48 hours, and we can start up a conversation and make sure that you get, all of your questions answered because we really want you to be successful with the, Microsoft Media Stack. So.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Anything else? So I guess I will continue the conversation here just a little bit and kind of ask some questions about to the other experts that we have online about some of my favorite topics here. So one of the things that we really have problem with is the non-deterministic finalization issue in managed languages, and this has been around since .NET 1.1. We tried to do a direct sound play in .NET 1.1, and it was an absolute disaster because of non-deterministic finalization problems that we have. So if you're not familiar with these problems in managed languages, one of the great things about managed languages is that you don't have to clean up after yourself. They have a GC, a garbage collector, kind of like your maid that comes around and cleans up after you when you make a mess. And that is really the best part of managed language is the garbage collector. The problem is when the garbage collector runs, every other thread in your managed app has to be suspended. Even if it's for a very short period of time, it still has to be suspended. And that's to guarantee that when the garbage collector is doing its job, that nobody else is touching that memory and mucking with it and changing it. And so, even though the garbage collector only runs for a really tiny amount of time, and we've done a lot of work to try to, you know, multi-thread the garbage collector and make sure that, you know, only threads that need to get shut down are shut down, and that some threads can continue to run when GC happens, there's still that really good possibility that your media thread is going to get shut down by the garbage collector while it's doing its business. And that's the real reason that we don't allow, or I should say, we don't suggest that you call any of our low-level media components that are extremely time necessary from managed languages, because, you know, media is all about getting things where they need to go at the right time. You know, this frame has to be presented at exactly this time. If this frame isn't presented at exactly this time, then it's going to be a visual artifact. People are going to notice that something is amiss. Either, you know, the two frames are too close together, or they're too far apart. Maybe we've completely dropped a frame and things get, you know, seem stuttery with audio. You hear clicks and pops. And so all of the media technologies that we've integrated into the managed world are very high level and don't really allow you to dig around into the guts. If you want to dig around into the guts of the media stream, you have to write these lower level C++ or C++ CX components. And that's been a really huge problem for a lot of our developers, because we have a great thriving ecosystem of C# developers out there. But most of the C# developers I talk about are a little bit intimidated by C++, particularly C++ CX, because we've extended the language, we've adopted some of the new standards. And so I guess I just kind of want to open up the discussion to Brian, Rob, and Dave. Have you guys noticed the same problem where developers are trying to do low-level things in C# and having these problems?
I tried myself, and problem is not really with the language, but with missing base class libraries.
Oh, missing base class libraries?
I've been doing some authentication stuff against TFS OData, and I had to do some encoding things. And with C#, I could easily use encoding.getbytes, I think. And it took me a few days to find it out how to do with C++.
Yeah, no, I agree. Particularly in the Windows Store space, C++ CX and Modern COM is extremely difficult to kind of get your head around, especially if you're coming from C# world. So, yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know that there's really any solutions that we have that can get around that, just because the way the garbage collector works, I don't think there's really any way to fix the issue. One of the things is, again, latency versus glitch free. You have to create a relatively large buffer in order for you to maintain glitch free playback. So that increases latency, which isn't always desirable. So when you're dealing with something like non-deterministic finalization, when you know garbage collector can run at any time, you really run into this problem with, well, in order to be able to avoid glitches, I have to have a buffer that's big enough to withstand however long the garbage collector is going to run. Well, the problem is you don't know. There's no way to determine how long or when the garbage collector is going to run, and so that really tends to kind of muck up the works. And the fact that we make it, you know, we require C++ CX, which is not necessarily an easy language to use, an easy environment to program in to write these components, really does make it difficult. Like I said, we've tried to make it easier with Media Stream Source, but if you're trying to do anything, you know, lower after the fact in the pipeline, it becomes much more difficult. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a pain point that we understand for our customers, and it's something that we're looking at, trying to understand what we can do to remedy that. But unfortunately, at this point in time, it's just part of the ecosystem, and we'll continue to try to make breakthroughs and help out our customers as best we can. All right, cool. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up with that. Dave, make sure to get in touch with me through my blogs. Anybody else out there in the interwebs, if you have any media questions, you think that you could benefit from some one-on-one email interaction with me, please feel free to get in touch with me through my MSDN blog. Put it up here on the screen again. It's right down here at the bottom. If you can't get in touch with me through my blog, I'm always on the forums as well. We have a really great thriving forum community for Windows Store apps. So don't be bashful and post, and we'll definitely do what we can to get your questions answered.
Thanks so much, James.
Yeah, thanks, James. That was great.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a good day, everyone.